My name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 356, titled Mein Jihad, Part 4, The Jihad for Freedom. This is being recorded on April 21st of 2002. This broadcast is going to continue a line of investigation that I've been engaging in really since the events of September 11th and in many ways before. Many of the things that I talk about may sound strange, unusual, incredible, what have you. I want to note for the listeners' purposes that there are detailed annotated descriptions of the broadcasts on the web in the For the Record section of www.spitfirelist1word.com. The sources are annotated. I'm reformatting the programs on September 11th to make them easier to read and to use. There are also two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which are linked to the For the Record site, wfmu.org/Dave Emery, and a longer URL, which have virtually the entire For the Record series available for download and or streaming on Real Audio. In the broadcast that is being recorded now, I'm going to be connecting up a line of speculation that I engaged in program 353 with some recent disclosures, which go to firm that up to a large extent. Many of the references will perhaps be vague to some listeners or incomprehensible. Please use the back broadcast. Please use the annotated descriptions and flesh out your understanding, because there's an awful lot to cover. We're going to be talking about links between the forces behind September 11th, Islamic fascism, the Wahhabi movement, the ultra-reactionary sect of Islam that prevails in Saudi Arabia, and because of the oil wealth of Saudi Arabia and much of the rest of the Islamic world. And we're going to be talking about the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. We're going to be connecting up the Milieu of Al-Taqwa, an Islamo-fascist organization linked by the Treasury Department and other investigators to the events of September 11th, with the highest levels of the Republican Party. One of the names that we're going to be talking about concerns Grover Norquist, or is Grover Norquist. First name Grover, last name N-O-R-Q-U-I-S-T. And we're going to be talking about his Islamic Institute. And we're going to first begin by giving you an idea of who Grover Norquist is and how powerful he is within the Republican Party. Following article is from the Boston Phoenix, a weekly alternative paper in Boston, and I want to note, as we get into the program, I want to note the very strong confluence between very conservative sources, business publications, and very liberal, or in some cases, left sources. This is in and of itself a very encouraging development in what is otherwise a very discouraging political landscape and path of inquiry. Please note that. Boston Phoenix of October 4th through 11th of 2001 had the following article by Seth Gittell, or Gittell, G-I-T-E-L-L. The title of the article is Strange Bedfellows, subtitled Grover Norquist and Abdurrahman Alamoudi. And this concerns Grover Norquist and his connections with Islamic fundamentalists, including elements connected to terrorism. We're going to develop this point of inquiry much, much further. But to understand who Grover Norquist is and why his connections to the milieu of Al-Taqwa are so important, listen to the following. During his presidential campaign and his first months in office, George W. Bush had no stronger supporter than Grover Norquist, the president of Americans for Tax Reform. During the New Hampshire primary, Norquist's group ran television ads that morphed the face of Arizona Senator John McCain into that of President Bill Clinton. When Bush finally took office, Norquist became a key ally in the president's tax cut quest. In its May 14th issue, The Nation highlighted the relationship in a piece titled Grover Norquist, Field Marshal of the Bush Plan, unquote. But now, as Bush embarks on a war against terrorism, the president may find Norquist more of a liability than an asset. The tax reformer has emerged as one of the leading conservative critics of the administration's legislative response to terror, the Anti-Terrorism Act of 2001. Certainly, Norquist is no defender of terror or terrorists. Still, he has, in a political and a business capacity, befriended those who have failed to renounce terror. I would add that there's much more to it than that, skipping down. The Protestant Norquist is a founding director of the Islamic Institute, a socially conservative Muslim think tank that eschews international issues in favor of domestic issues such as tax cuts and faith-based initiatives. In addition, Norquist's lobbying firm, Janus Merit Strategies, LLC, was officially registered as a lobbyist for the Islamic Institute, as well as for Abdurrahman Alamoudi, the founder and former executive director of the American Muslim Council. And skipping down again, to give you an idea of what sort of a right creature Abdurrahman Alamoudi is, and this is fairly tame for a lot of the meal you're about to hear about. Take Alamoudi, skipping down in this article, take Alamoudi, who attended an anti-Israel protest outside the White House on October 28, 2000. Alamoudi revved up the crowd, saying, "I have been labeled by the media in New York as a supporter of Hamas. Anybody supporters of Hamas here?" The crowd cheered. "Hear that, Bill Clinton? We are all supporters of Hamas. I wish they added that I am also a supporter of Hezbollah," unquote. Both groups are on the State Department's official list of terrorist organizations. Now, consider very carefully, remember the name, the Islamic Institute, and remember Grover Norquist. We're going to be taking a look at people who are on the board of directors either of the Islamic Institute or of overlapping Islamic organizations, allegedly charitable, which in turn have interlocking directorates with Al-Taqwa. Al-Taqwa is a mysterious organization alleged by the San Francisco Chronicle, in a San Francisco Chronicle article of March 12th of 2002, to have been founded by François Genoux, a key Nazi operative before, during, and after World War II, who was very much involved not only with the escape and sustenance of Nazi war criminals, but also with the disbursement of post-World War II Nazi funds. That, as veteran listeners know, inevitably at the direction of the Bormann organization and Reichsleiter Martin Bormann himself. On the board of directors of Al-Taqwa are Ahmed Huber, a protege of Johann von Leers, Hitler's minister of, Goebbels' minister of anti-Semitic propaganda, Goebbels the propaganda minister of the Third Reich. Ahmed Huber, nay Alfred Huber, is a prominent fascist who has been forming links between Islamo-fascists and the European New Right and European fascist elements and American fascist elements as well. Youssef Nada, the founder of Al-Taqwa, later Nada Management, founded in part by money from six different members of the bin Laden family. Youssef Nada himself, a member of the Islamo-fascist Muslim Brotherhood, had worked for Third Reich Intelligence. According to the book Dollars for Terror by Richard Labeviere, Youssef Nada worked for the Abwehr of Admiral Wilhelm Canaris. That's discussed in numerous programs. We've talked about Al-Taqwa and Ahmed Huber in various broadcasts, for the record, 335, 36, 338, 340, 341, 342, 43, 44, 350, 351, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And we're talking about it again in, for the record, 356. Now, in For the Record program number 353, I noted the presence in the United States of many Islamic fundamentalists, or as I call them, Islamo-fascist elements, and by that I do not want to be misunderstood, or in that context I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist. That is not the case, but there are very powerful elements within Islam that are, and which have an ongoing historical relationship with the forces of fascism, past and present. In For the Record 353, I noted the presence of many of these organizations and individuals in the United States, and what I wondered about, and I wondered about it on the air, was the possibility that perhaps some of these organizations and individuals which are antithetical to the United States and which in fact hate American democratic culture, that with a small d, and which are anything but liberal in their outlook towards other ethnic groups and towards other faiths, I wondered what they were doing in the United States since they hate the United States. Many of them had collaborated with the anti-Soviet effort in the first Afghan war of the 1980s, and what I wondered about was whether perhaps some of these elements had been brought into the United States as part of the Republican ethnic outreach effort in which, in decades past, Nazi war criminals, including at least one SS intelligence unit, Central and Eastern European fascists allied with the Third Reich, were brought into the United States in order to counteract, quote, Jewish influence, unquote, in the American or on the American electoral landscape. And in particular, they were designed to help drive to the right some of the Eastern European ethnic communities in many of America's urban centers in the so-called Rust Belt, the old Northeast, and industrial Midwest. I think there is now a very substantive body of information confirming that many of these Islamo-fascist elements have, in fact, been situated in the United States as, to a certain extent, part of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. It is in that context that we're going to continue to explore this very, very, very important connection. Some of the names you're going to hear: Khalid bin Mahfouz, whom we've spoken about before, strongly connected to the Bush Organization, strongly connected to the Bush family and to bin Laden and to al-Taqwa. You're going to be hearing about the Islamic Institute. You're going to be hearing about the SAR Foundation, something we spoke about in For the Record 353. Note also the SAFA Fund, S-A-F-A, the World Assembly of Muslim Youth. We're going to be taking a look at a number of overlapping Islamic funds and investment firms and civic action groups that have in common not only finances, but also interlocking directorates. And the connections here go to the highest levels of the Republican Party. And note again the confluence between liberal and very conservative sources. We're going to begin with one of the latter, or we're going to continue with one of the latter. This article is from the Weekly Standard. That is a News Corporation publication. This is the Weekly Standard of April 8th. Of 2002, volume 007, issue 29. The Weekly Standard is edited by William Crystal, one of the top so-called neocons within the Republican Party. This article is by Stephen Schwartz, the author of a forthcoming book, The Two Faces of Islam, The House of Saud from Tradition to Terror. It was Stephen Schwartz who authored an article from the Spectator of the United Kingdom about Wahhabism and Islamo-fascism. In fact, it was he who coined the term Islamo-fascism that I have borrowed to describe this fascist element within Islam. This article is titled by the Weekly Standard, Wahhabis in the Old Dominion: What the Federal Raids in Northern Virginia Uncovered. It's by Stephen Schwartz. The Weekly Standard, April 8, 2002. It reads as follows. Federal law enforcement has kicked over quite an anthill in Northern Virginia. A U.S. Treasury task force, Operation Green Quest, has been investigating the funding of Islamic terror. Raids on March 20th struck an extraordinary array of financial, charitable, and ostensibly religious entities identified with Muslim and Arab concerns in this country, most of them headquartered in Northern Virginia. Reaction to the raid suggests the feds inflicted serious injury on the Wahhabi lobby, the Saudi-backed extremist network that largely controls Islam in America. Officials of the targeted groups, as well as their non-Muslim apologists, notably GOP operative Grover Norquist, the chief enabler of Islamic extremists seeking access to the White House, have condemned the raids as civil rights violations. The convoluted system of interlocking directorates, global banking transactions, and ideological activities exposed in Northern Virginia will take time to sort out. Operation Green Quest has drawn attention to a previously overlooked aspect of support for extremism in this country. The principal threat comes not from the thousands of working-class Arab immigrants in places like New Jersey and Michigan who contribute modest sums to the so-called Islamic charities, but from the Arab elite. The Saudis stand behind all of it. The kingdom pledged $400 million last year for the support of martyrs' families, unquote, according to the Saudi embassy website. At $5,300 per martyr, that works out to about 75,000 martyrs, suggesting that Saudi princes anticipate a lot more suicide bombings than Israel has yet suffered. The Saudis offered a fraudulent, that's in the opinion of the writer, peace plan this year intended to divert attention from their involvement in the horrors of September 11th. By the way, one should note in that regard that the average Palestinian family has an annual income of $1,575, roughly a third of what each martyr's family gets. Continuing. The keystone of the Saudi-sponsored Northern Virginia Network is the SAR Foundation, created by Suleiman Abdul Aziz Al-Raji, a scion of one of the richest Saudi families. The SAR Foundation is connected to Al-Taqwa, a shell company formerly based in Switzerland, where its leading figures included a notorious neo-Nazi and Islamist, Ahmed Huber. Subsequently moved to the United States, Al-Taqwa was shut down after September 11th and its assets frozen by U.S. presidential order. But operations continued as the Wahhabi lobby shifted to backup institutions located here. By the way, I would add that this is in all likelihood a reference to Mercy International, a derivative subsidiary of Al-Taqwa that moved to the United States, specifically to Michigan. We talked about that in For the Record 351. Continuing. The SAR Foundation has also been linked to Khalid bin Mahfouz, the former lead financial advisor to the Saudi royal family and ex-head of the National Commercial Bank of Saudi Arabia. Mahfouz has been named by French intelligence as the backer of Osama bin Laden. Mahfouz endowed the Muwafaq Foundation, which U.S. authorities confirm was an arm of bin Laden's terror organization. Muwafaq's former chief, Yassin al-Qadi, oversaw the financial penetration of Bosnia-Herzegovina and Albania by Wahhabi terrorists in the late 1990s. By the way, I would note parenthetically and in passing that as we looked at in For the Record 354, part of the directorate of SECO, the European-based subsidiary of the Bin Laden Organization, the Saudi investment company, were Hans with the Kopp family. That's Hans and Magdalena Kopp, who were associated with the Shikarki AG firm, which was involved in not only the Afghan Mujahideen support efforts, but also the Iran-Contra affair, and was heavily involved in drug trafficking. Magdalena Kopp is currently presiding over the war crimes trial of Slobodan Milosevic, and I would note that there is documented activity by Al-Taqwa in the former Yugoslavia, and we're going to be talking about that, not only the 13th Waffen-SS or Hanjar Division, one of whose members was Ali Izetbegovic, but also the 21st Waffen-SS Division, the Skanderbeg Division, the sons and grandsons of whom became key elements of the Kosovo Liberation Army. We're going to be talking about Yugoslavia and connections to Al-Taqwa later in the program. Continuing with this Weekly Standard article, men like Al-Raji, Mahfouz, and Al-Qadi are the big players in the financing of Islamic extremism, and their paths repeatedly lead back to Northern Virginia. They don't play for small stakes. The SAR Foundation received $1.7 billion in donations in 1998, although this was left out of the foundation's tax filings until 2000. No explanation has been offered for this bit of accounting sorcery. And a major personality on the ground in Virginia is an individual named Jamal Barzinji, B-A-R-Z-I-N-J-I, whose office in Herndon was a major target of the raids. Remember Jamal Barzinji? He's associated with the Islamic Institute and Youssef Nada. Continuing. Speaking of Jamal Barzinji, in 1980, he was listed in local public records as a representative of the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, or WAMY, an arm of the Saudi regime with offices in Virginia. WAMY has been deeply involved in providing cover for Wahhabi terrorism. The 2002 entry in the U.S. Business Directory lists the president of the World Assembly of Muslim Youth office in Annandale, Virginia, as Abdullah bin Laden, the terrorist's younger brother. By the way, I would note that his half-brother, Islam bin Laden, has recently had his offices raided and is the focal point of a key European investigation. The chairman of the board, co-chairman of the board of SECO, the European subsidiary of the bin Laden organization, headed by Islam bin Laden, is Baudin Dunant, who was an attorney who represented François Genoux in the early 1980s. Continuing, Barzinji serves as a trustee and officer of the Amana Mutual Funds Trust, a growth and income mutual fund headquartered in Bellingham, Washington, conveniently near the Canadian border. Amana's board also includes Yaqub Mirza, a Pakistani physicist who shares Barzinji's Herndon office address and who is widely described as a financial genius. Another board member and tenant in the Herndon office is Samir Salah, S-A-L-A-H. Salah formerly ran a branch of Altaqua in the Caribbean, heads a financial firm linked to SAR, and directs Dar al-Hijra, a mosque in Falls Church, Virginia, notable for hardline Wahhabi preaching. Salah is also deeply involved with Taiba International Aid Association, a Virginia charity with a Bosnian branch that is being investigated by authorities in Sarajevo. Front groups interfacing between the Wahhabi Saudi money movers under federal suspicion and the broader American public include two institutions active in the religious field, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, or IIIT, and the Graduate School of Islamic and Social Sciences, or GSISS. The involvement of GSISS with the financing of extremism is especially startling in that it alone is credentialed by both the Department of Defense to certify Muslim chaplains for the U.S. Armed Forces. Barzinji has appeared on the boards of both. I have speculated at great length and in numerous broadcasts about a fifth column within the U.S. national security and political establishments, which was complicit with the events of September 11th, and this certainly suggests that within the armed forces there may be some of these Islamo-fascist elements. Note that the GSISS alone is credentialed by the Department of Defense to certify Muslim chaplains in the U.S. armed forces, and that Barzinji, an associate of Youssef Nada, has appeared on the board of both that and the IIIT. Continuing. The day of the raids, Barzinji appeared on U.S. television news insisting he knew of no questionable behavior by the groups under scrutiny and promising full cooperation with the authorities. But in a familiar pattern of duplicity, he expressed himself quite differently in the Islamic media. Barzinji told the internet news service Islam Online he believed the investigations fulfilled the will not of the Bush administration, but of, quote, elements within the government, media, and academia who were unhappy with the positive attention being given to Muslims. This tortured formulation, repeated in several variations, embodied the Islamist fantasy that every doubt cast on the activities of the Wahhabi lobby is the product of Jewish influence. Speaking to Islam Online, Barzinji spelled out his anxieties. He alleged that the real powers behind the raids were, quote, self-styled Middle East experts, individuals who, quote, do not want to see Muslims develop such excellent relations with the government, assuming political rights, unquote. This line simply dumbs down one peddled by the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CAIR, which condemns any challenge to the Wahhabi lobby as a product of, quote, right-wing commentators, unquote. And, I would note in that regard not only Jamal Barzinji of the Islamic Institute, but the numerous connections to Al-Taqwa. And hang on to your hats, because this is going to get even more interesting and yet also more horrifying as this Islamo-fascist milieu with direct evidentiary tributaries running back to the Third Reich can be brought ever closer to the very core of the Republican Party and the Bush administration. Very important story appeared in the Wall Street Journal this past week. This is from the Wall Street Journal of Thursday, April 18th of 2002. An article by Glenn R. Simpson headlined, O'Neill Met Muslim Activists Tied to Charities. And this will bring this whole connection much, much closer. 2 weeks after his agents raided the offices of several Islamic charities and businesses suspected of financing terrorism, Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill met with two politically connected Muslim activists, one a longtime Bush family associate, who each had a tie to the targeted groups. The April 4th luncheon with Mr. O'Neill was convened to allow Muslim Americans to voice complaints about the March 20th raid on the International Institute for Islamic Thought and 19 related entities that operate out of offices at 555 Grove Street in Herndon, Virginia, a Washington suburb. Among the Muslim leaders attending was Talat Othman, O-T-H-M-A-N, a longtime associate and supporter of President Bush's family, who gave a benediction at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia in August of 2000. Mr. Othman went to the Treasury representing the Arab American Business and Professional Association, but he also serves on the board of Amana Mutual Funds Trust, an investment firm founded by M. Yaqub Mirza, the Northern Virginia businessman who set up most of the entities targeted by the Treasury and whose tax records were sought in the raid. Also at the meeting was Khaled Safouri, head of the Islamic Institute, a group he co-founded with GOP activist Grover Norquist to organize conservative Muslims on behalf of the GOP. The Institute has accepted $20,000 in contributions from another Grove Street entity suspected of terrorist connections, the Safa Trust, as earlier reported by Newsweek. Skipping down. The meeting reflects the increasing complexity of the Bush administration's crackdown on terror financing. As the global investigation broadens, the labyrinthine money trail is leading to more and more seemingly mainstream entities generating political controversy. Some of the people targeted in the March 20th raids in Virginia are well-established figures in the U.S. Muslim community, and their treatment has generated an intense backlash against the Bush administration. Similar controversies have erupted both in the Arab world and in Europe as governments have frozen assets at the behest of the U.S. without disclosing detailed evidence to support the moves. The case also highlights conflicts between the Bush administration's domestic political goals and its war on terror. GOP officials began courting the U.S. Muslim community intensely in the late 1990s, seeking to add that ethnic bloc to the party's political base. Skipping down. The Islamic Institute declared itself pleased with the encounter. The meeting was constructive, and the leaders expressed their concerns to Secretary O'Neill regarding the insensitive actions of Treasury agents during the raids against the Muslim American organizations and concerns of the community that civil rights violations occurred, the Islamic Institute said on its website. Secretary O'Neill promised that these concerns would be investigated, unquote. Bruce Zagaris, an asset forfeiture lawyer who represents clients in similar cases, said a meeting between Treasury officials and anyone who might be associated with the entity under investigation is very unusual. Quote, "It's virtually impossible to arrange such a meeting, especially with the Treasury Secretary," Mr. Zagaris said. "It's very difficult to even get phone calls returned." Unquote. I would add that we're going to continue with this Wall Street Journal article in the second half of the broadcast. Remember the name Talat Othman. He's on the board of directors of the Amana Funds. And as you'll see, there are interlocking directorates and interlocking financial ties between Othman, the Islamic Institute, Al-Taqwa, Youssef Nada, and, as we're going to see in the second side, elements connected to the Bormann Organization and the Deutsche Börse, and even some Russian biological warfare entities. Bear in mind that in the book Serpent's Walk, the microorganisms which destroy much of the United States prior to the Nazi takeover are of ostensibly Russian origin. More about that in the second side of the program. The various programs that I've done over the years are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address for Spitfire is spitfirelist.com. Visit their real audio-equipped website at www.spitfirelist.com. There are detailed and annotated descriptions of the programs available in the For the Record section of the website, and there are links to two URLs maintained by sister station WFMU that have the For the Record programs available for streaming and or for download on real audio. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 356, Mind Jihad, part four, The Jihad for Freedom. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.